The God who gave us life gave us liberty. The problem is there are people in power these days who really don't like that. Come, travel the road to freedom with your host, Eleanor White. Welcome to show number 34, recorded on June 22, 2006. Road to Freedom is a show by and about the targets of electronically assisted, organized citizen gang stalking throughout the world. Road to Freedom brings you information on this crime wave, which has so far been denied by every government and private agency except one, whose missions are to help those who are targets of crime. The one brave agency which is publicly supporting the fight to expose these crimes is the Toronto, Ontario Rape Crisis Center. We are also happy to report that now several police officers have at least privately acknowledged that organized citizen gang stalking is real, and that they have difficulty pursuing these gangs as there are many members, and each individual gang member does not commit serious crimes when the crimes are considered in isolation. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and may not be those of others who are targets of citizen gang stalking and electronic harassment, or of any person or group who may replay these recorded programs. Information for anyone who would like to know more about organized stalking and electronic harassment is invited to visit this show's website, which is shoestringradio.net. One big long word, shoestringradio.net. Organized citizen gang stalking and the covert use of advanced electronic weapons on citizen gang stalking targets is basically the use of lies, again lies, to motivate networked groups of citizens who see themselves as some kind of citizen police, to destroy the lives of their innocent targets using both person-to-person harassment and electronics. These programs are about the ongoing efforts to expose this organized, networked activity and hopefully to stop it. Today we talk with Rosemary, a target of organized stalking and electronic harassment since 1997. Rosemary's story includes repeated coincidences in which the same people turn up in different roles. This does happen in some gang stalking and electronic harassment cases. It shows the extent to which these stalkers go to completely surround and invade the lives of their targets. If you, listener, find this hard to believe, please read my review of David Lawson's book, Terrorist Stalking in America, which is posted on the shoestringradio.net website. The review includes many direct quotes from Lawson's findings as he investigated, over a 12-year period, citizen stalking gangs throughout North America. These gangs, which are large, sometimes hundreds of people, do in fact surround their targets around the clock and keep them under intense surveillance and invasion of privacy. If you read the book, or even the review, you will begin to see that this is crime which is only equaled by citizen surveillance squads in dictatorial countries such as Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union. Welcome to Road to Freedom, Rosemary. Please tell us your story.
Thank you, Eleanor. Let me begin by saying that I reside on the East Coast of the United States, Southern East Coast. I have a degree in library and information science in English, many hours towards a master's degree in information science. I was a librarian, media specialist, and a teacher for 25 years. I'm now retired and interning as a private investigator. I'm also a freelance artist and photographer. I've been married for 36 years, My husband is employed by a large computer company in a financial decision-making capacity. My initial gang stalking began in 1977 when I met a man I will call Chico while in the hospital. We became friends. At the time, I was having marital problems, so a friendship ensued. In the course of the friendship, I found out very disturbing information about this new friend, Chico. I found that he was into drugs, into alcohol, theft, robbery, and perhaps even murder. While visiting Chico at his home in January of 1997, I was introduced to a friend of his, who I'll call Tom, who was staying with him. Tom claimed he had just been released from prison. During that evening, Tom and Chico made some very surprising and disturbing claims. They claimed to be members of a large group of motorcycle gang members, perhaps Hell's Angels. They claimed that they were impersonators, that they were hitmen, and even that they were professional killers. They informed me that they would carry out a robbery murder on the following Friday. Tom said, "Open the newspaper on Saturday, and you'll read about it." Of course, I really didn't believe them. Unfortunately, I opened the paper on Saturday, and the murder robbery was there. The following Monday, I called the local police and the local FBI. It was this day, I believe, that all of my gang stalking began. An FBI agent, quote, came to my home and took my statement. This FBI agent had been at Chico's home the past weekend when this information was disclosed to me, when they informed me that they were persecutors, and they also showed me their cause of disguise. They had disguises of people such as policemen, mailmen, Rollins security workers, ADT security workers, plumbers, etc., etc., etc. On the visit to Chico's home, when Tom was introduced to me, they also showed me their equipment. They showed me their voice changer, which was connected to a computer. I accidentally made the statement, "You look exactly like a person on the FBI's most wanted list, who's wanted for already having been convicted in absentia for importing marijuana." Tom then made this foreboding statement. "How would you like to spend your entire day in bed, going only to the door or to the window to look out? I can do that, you know." Not having a clue about what he was speaking, I glibly replied, "Oh, sure, that sounds like fun." 9 years of gang stalking and electronic harassment began that evening. It's difficult to relay all of the many disquieting, threatening, and physically and psychologically painful events which then occurred. There were and are so many. It began with theft. My child's bicycle was stolen. My neighborhood was hit with a rash of breaking and theft, including $30,000 worth of jewelry from the neighbor. We, my husband and I, who were still together, sold our home and moved. This move did not put an end to this harassment. It only heightened it and made it worse. We moved to a rural area on a few acres surrounded by woods. This made harassment easier, but not being aware that this was what was occurring, I had no idea of what was going on or that this move would not end the problem. Having a window for my bedroom facing the woods, I began to experience the pain of electronic harassment. Insomnia was included. I once looked out my bedroom window in the middle of the night to see two young men dressed in camouflage clothing, carrying rifles, militarily marching around a tree. I saw a person sitting in a tree directly adjacent to my bedroom window. I once saw a young man in my driveway with what looked like a boom microphone held up to my nearby bathroom window. A pentagram was burned into the grass on the vacant lot adjacent to my home.
And a pentagram is a satanic symbol, right?
Yes, a pentagram is a satanic symbol. Oh, gosh. Animals in the neighborhood were then sodomized and killed. There were llamas on a farm on the road next to mine. And I believe there were about five or six llamas. And one evening, these llamas were beat unmercifully and sodomized, had to be taken to a nearby university for treatment. Two of them died. My dog died an unusual death the only day I left her out on my back patio. My brand new car would never start. The battery was always dead, and the mechanics could never figure out why. I was followed everywhere by people harassing me. I was followed on foot, and I was followed in the car. The cars following me would tailgate me and run me off the road. That evening, while at Tom's, they had said to me, "How would you like to be run off the road? Every time you see a red car, your hands will shake, you'll sweat, and maybe you'll be run off the road." Two people rear-ended me in 1 week. One day, while in my bedroom, Chico, quote, entered and strangled me very powerfully, very strongly. It was such a feeling that I thought that this was the end. He said to me, "I'm going to kill you. I'm going to slit your throat."
Did you report that to the police?
At this time, I did not report this incident to the police. I don't know if I was afraid or that I thought I wouldn't be able to prove it. But at that time, I didn't have the confidence to report it to the police, so I did not.
You mentioned, though, that more recently a detective told you that he knew gang stalking is real?
Yes. Now, 7 or 8 years later, when I am definitely sure that this is what is going on, I spoke to a detective, a county detective, and I had sent him David Lawson's package and Norma Lawrence's catch video on DVD, and then I spoke to him and I asked him if he was aware of gang stalking and if it was going on, and he said yes, he was, and he knew where it was originating. So now the police are aware.
Now we're starting to hear bits and pieces of reports from all over North America. They're small and they're private. They're not willing to say this in public, but they are beginning to acknowledge what's been happening for 20 plus years.
Oh, really? Well, this detective definitely said he was aware. I installed I'm still in the home, the rural home in the country, and I installed a large security system, huge fence, and electronic gate. I did not want to leave my home. I had all the trees cut down in the backyard. I hoped that this would put an end to this harassment. But it was at this time the break-ins began to occur. They occurred mainly when I was away from the house. The security alarm would go off and the police would be called. One day, I saw a young man in my backyard urinating. I called the police. They found him walking on the road, and they brought him back to say I'm sorry, to apologize. He was very angry and bitter and vindictive about this. So many incidents began occurring that I was calling the police every day, and I felt like an idiot. The final break-in occurred when I was home alone, upstairs, dressing. The security alarm went off. Being upstairs, home alone, in a large home, surrounded by winds, woods, I called the police. The dispatcher told me to lock myself and my remaining dog in my bedroom or bathroom. The police arrived. They searched the property, but by this time the intruders were gone. Being somewhat upset, I left my home and I went out. When I returned, there was a white van carrying many teenage boys parked in front of my house. I parked behind them and they left. I pulled into the garage. We decided to sell this house immediately. It was not just the break-ins which convinced us, but the pain of the electronic harassment and the insomnia. This pain is excruciating. It feels as if thousands of volts of electricity are going through your body. It makes me cry when it's happening. This whole story makes me cry. Thinking isolation was making me susceptible to this harassment, we then moved to a large condominium in the city that was known for high security. This building was inhabited mainly by elderly people, and it had extremely high security. I figured, with this many good people around, the harassment had to stop. It didn't. A new type of harassment began. And it was at this time that I began to search the internet for clues to what was happening and an explanation for these horrifying experiences. I then came upon Eleanor White and Norma Lawrence's website and was happy to finally have an explanation for these terrifying and terrorizing experiences.
Let me just interject here that Norma Lawrence is the founder and director of CATCH, C-A-T-C-H, which stands for Citizens Against Technological and Community-Based Harassment. And CATCH is based in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and works in conjunction with the Toronto Rape Crisis Center. Their website is catchcanada.org.
As an aside, I'll mention that this condominium was previously owned by the chief of the police of the White House from Roosevelt to Ford, the one that we live in, the exact unit that we live in. His name was Mr. Quimby. This just strikes me as coincidental now, but the Attorney General of the state that I reside in also lives in this building. This Attorney General is running for governor. My neighbor upstairs is an acoustic engineer. My neighbor to the right is a retired naval officer. My other adjacent neighbor moved out, and the unit was purchased by two professors. A lady I befriended down the hall is retired from the Department of Defense. There is a boat basin, an airport, and many parks directly across the street from my building. There are many homeless people living in the park across the street. Many boaters, retired Navy and Marine personnel reside here in this building. An Air Force base is directly across the water. The building has an extensive audio and video surveillance system. There are security guards and valets. My unit has two intercom systems, and the building itself has numerous video cameras and surveillance. I incorrectly believed I was safe. I began to remodel this condominium. The first month I was here, a security guard and a valet entered my condominium unit without permission. I had just stepped out of the shower and was dressing. Keys to our condo and automobiles are on file at the security, which is now called courtesy desk. This was the beginning of many illegal and terrifying experiences once again. This building is 80% glass, so sound travels easily up it. I began hearing, and this is awful, "Have sex with the security guard," repeatedly. While residing in the large house in the country, I had hired a private investigator where I lived before moving to this condominium. I needed to know who was doing this. and what was going on. Now in the new home, the condominium, the private investigator who was now working on his own contacted me. I once again hired him since the harassment was starting again. Then our water heater leaked. A hole had been punched into it, and it flooded my newly remodeled condominium. While repairing
Rosemary, just let me interject there that water heater tanks are required. Water heater tanks are required to handle the pressure of the water system, which is around anywhere from 90 to maybe 120 pounds per square inch. So these tanks are not thin metal. They're very substantial. And to have a hole punched in a water heater is very deliberate. It's not accidental. Not at all.
It isn't. You know, we have a new one now, and I can't check it. But it wasn't wear and tear, and it wasn't a leak from a line. It was a definite hole in the bottom, right at the bottom. While repairing the water heater, which was stored in the pantry, we stored our food in the storage room. We have a storage room right across from our condominium. We put it in a grocery cart. Within 2 days, our food was gone. We found a valet I will call Chris, and the new head of security dumping this perfectly good food in the dumpster. My husband reacted angrily. Harassment escalated now. One afternoon, while I was napping, this valet, whom I'll call Chris, had been changed to be a maintenance man. He's now in charge of housekeeping. He entered my condo. Here he is. He's a valet, housekeeping, and maintenance man. He should not have a key or should not be able to enter my condo. He stood by my bed and he recounted. And this is very hard for me to say, Eleanor, because this is not the kind of things that I usually hear or say. He said to me, "You have been a bad girl. You deserve a spanking." I was flabbergasted. But I did not report this incident to the management or to the board or to the police. At this time, my most prized bracelet disappeared. It's a valuable bracelet bearing many family heirlooms and many, many items of sentimental value, and also has a high monetary value.
Rosemary, let me say this, that many targets of organized stalking and electronic harassment who have been at it for a while, we tend to have extra locking systems so that maintenance people can't enter while you're home. I had that happen too once. And these are not like extra locks installed on the door. These are things that go onto the knob or wedges or somehow prevent the door from being opened, which are not part of the door itself, and that's important because in some cases, like an apartment, you're not allowed to modify the door. But it's smart to have systems like that if you possibly can.
Okay. Well, we had just moved here at that time, so I wasn't really aware that I needed to keep the doors extra locked and extra secure, you know. But so this bracelet is gone. I sent flyers to all pawn shops, and I reported this. This is when I began to report it to the police. A detective came out, took the report. At this time, I also told him about the entering of the valet and the statement he made, and few other things that had been happening around here. So it's in a police report now where I live. Anyway, I was flabbergasted by this statement that he had made about the spanking. And it says, "Once Chris had stated to me, offhand, 'I hate rich people. We are not wealthy, but many, many wealthy, powerful people do reside in this building. I could no longer afford to pay this private investigator I'd hired, who was an ex-Marine, so I told him I could no longer hire him, I could no longer pay him. he hadn't gotten to the bottom of it. He then said, well, you can become a private investigator yourself. I'll supervise your internship. I applied to the Department of Agriculture.
What do they have to do with detective licenses?
In the state I reside, which I can say is Florida, the Department of Agriculture is responsible for licensing. And so there, which doesn't make too much sense to me, but sort of like the Department of the Treasury being in charge of the Secret Service. But the Department of Agriculture through the state is who is responsible for licensing private investigators. Anything? And I received my license, and I began interning with my private investigator. He was now working for a defense attorney on many murders in adjacent counties. One of these murders involved the son of one of my husband's employees. We interviewed many, many suspects in jail for murder. While doing research for this private investigator, I happened to come across a sexual predator who was working in our building as a valet. I informed the management, the board, the condominium board, and the residents. This valet, the sexual predator, was fired. He lives just two blocks from here. One afternoon, following this, I received a telephone call from a man identifying himself as Chris, the valet, the housekeeping man, in which he stated, "This is Chris. I am going to come in there," and this was said in a very, very threatening manner. "I'm going to come in there and rape you and beat you." I'm omitting the expletive. This statement terrified me, as he had entered the condo without permission many times before. It terrified me. He changed the lock. Unfortunately, I just had a falling out with the investigator I'd hired and been interning under. We parted ways the morning I received this telephone call. I decided to get a new supervisor and to use more experience to hurry my internship along. I had just registered for the World Investigators Conference in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I intended to go anyway. I paid for my trip and my room and the convention. At the airport, while eating at a restaurant waiting for the plane, I saw the initial private investigator I'd hired. I failed to mention that this investigator lived just two blocks from Chico, the man I met in 1997. I did not know this at the time when I hired him, and did not find this out until months later. While at the airport, just as I boarded the plane, I began feeling very, very ill. And by the time I boarded the airplane, I felt weak, shaky, and nauseous. When I finally sat down, I was next to two local area doctors. Becoming sicker and sicker by the moment, I asked the flight attendant if I might move to the rear of the aircraft. There I began having convulsions. I do not remember anymore. I awoke in a hospital in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The plane had had to make an emergency landing. I didn't make it to the World Investigators Conference, where I hoped to hear and meet John Walsh and Dr. Henry Lee, and perhaps inform them of this phenomenon. The original investigator was on this plane. Coincidentally, I ran into the female physician I had been seated next to on the airplane at a local mall 1 week after I returned. I don't ever go to this mall, and I find that it was really ironic that she was there also. She called my name, Rosemary, and came up and spoke to me, gave me her card, and said, would I please come to see her? I was so upset about the recent occurrences one day, I was standing out by the elevator in my building crying. When my neighbor from the Department of Defense came out and said, why are you crying? I told her of the rape and battery threats, the burglaries, and the theft. She escorted me to the management office where I reported these things. The managers at the board needed to rule on what had happened. The maintenance man was allowed to retain his job. I received a letter from the condominium board and the management saying, "I was just airing dirty laundry." I received a letter from one board member stating that she hates these kind of people. Was she referring to me, or was she referring to the housekeeping maintenance man? A threat of raid and battery to me is not airing dirty laundry. I was extremely offended and appalled. Chris continued to work here. While celebrating my birthday a few weeks later, in October 2005, I met a girl who said she worked for my husband's computer company. We moved to a table to talk. There, she said, she worked for the FBI and America's Most Wanted. She asked, "How much is your husband worth?" I had seen this girl many times when I lived in a house in the country, sometimes in the company of Chico and Tom. She stated that she was going to, and this is quote, "take my husband away from me." I didn't know what she meant by this statement. Was she going to seduce him? Was she going to kill him? Was she going to put him in jail? What was going on here? I had seen this woman many times, on a road, up to my house, in restaurants, jogging past my home. It was at this time my Visa credit card was stolen and turned up being used in Spain to buy perfume. Coincidentally, while speaking to this girl, there was a man sitting at the bar staring directly at me. My husband and I were to leave for a northern U.S. East Coast city this week, where my husband had to participate in a large lawsuit concerning his job. When I entered the courtroom with him, his opponent looked exactly like the man who had been staring at me from the bar that day. This lawsuit was settled for millions of dollars the company received, not my husband. This man also looked like a man who was in our elevator prior to this, about 2 weeks before that, and who was also on our trip to Italy, where I heard nothing but the words, "These are disgusting people," continuously on the tour bus. The tour bus did have a microphone, but I could hear, all I heard was, "These are disgusting people." My husband's legs went out from under him while we were in Rome at the Colosseum. He broke his ankle on the first day of the trip. I have had this happen to me many, many, many times. My legs feel as if they have been knocked out right from under me. There's no reason for it. You can be standing there, and all of a sudden your legs just go out from under you.
Now, let me mention, Rosemary, that you're not the only one that's had that. I've had that personally happen to me a number of times over the years. In my case, my legs get yanked powerfully forward out from under me, causing me to fall flat on my back on the sidewalk. We don't know how this is done, but clearly very advanced technology is being used on us.
I know. I cannot understand the feeling. You can be just standing there, and it's like, boom. Well, my legs don't get knocked backwards. They get knocked forward.
So mine are forwards also.
Yeah. And it's like a very strong, powerful thing. Knocks your legs out from under you.
Yeah, this is not unusual among us, and we absolutely do not know the technology that can do this, but it's definitely there, and it's not some little thing you're imagining, because you end up on the sidewalk.
You end up on the sidewalk, as did my husband. I know this phenomenon, some call citizen gang stalking and electronic harassment, is really happening. And I believe it is national, and after this trip that it's international in scope. It's occurred many times across the United States and also on travels throughout the world. This is terrible. Our condominium is now for sale. I am so tired of moving. This is just a few occurrences which have happened. This is just the tip of the iceberg. Just a few. Just the ones that just happen to stand out right now. There are trillions more. It all started 9 years ago, and it hasn't let up since. I wonder if it will ever.
Well, now that the police are getting involved, at least we're in the tunnel. We may not see much light at the end yet, but when the police start acknowledging things, that is definitely progress. How has it been for you recently?
Well, it. I know what we had. Oh, my phone is. The battery is getting dead. I have to mention this. My husband and I took a trip to Antigua last month, and we were in a very desolate, isolated area where no one knew our whereabouts, and not one of these incidents occurred. Not one of these. Phrases were transmitted through the air. Nothing occurred whatsoever. Nobody knew our whereabouts or anything. And I was so thankful. It was what I've had in about 8 or 9 years. And I have to believe that it is not me and it's not a mental illness. That it is a group of people, and it is gang stalking, and it is technological harassment.
Well, many, many people. One survey we took in 2002 returned about 1 per 100 saying they had all or most of the symptoms, and that's both gang stalking and electronic harassment. So you're far from alone. This is not imaginary stuff. And as people who have listened to Road to Freedom show number 3 know, there are 5 weapons which have been around for as long as half a century, which can do a lot of this. And so clearly the capability is there. There's no shortage of criminals, never has been. So, folks, this is entirely feasible as well. Even if you don't believe us, at least the means and the motive is there. There are people that always enjoy targeting others for revenge or, in some cases, simple pleasure. And Rosemary's having all these strange people in her life, and as she mentioned, this isn't all of them. These are just some highlights. This is not a made-up phenomenon at all, and we just hope that we can expose it before it gets to your doorstep.
I would hope so. I see the numbers increasing. More people are agreeing with me. I've met more people recently that have experienced the same thing, and I would hate for anybody to have to experience. Because it can become very, very, very make you sick and weak.
Yes, it can. It can totally destroy you physically, and the doctors will not be able to understand why or what's going on here.
You asked how it's been recently, and this last past weekend I had a terrible bout with it, and I ended up in the emergency room. But by the time you get to the emergency room, all the symptoms gone and you look fine.
Well, that's me too. I can go out and do errands just fine, and when I get home, suddenly I have no energy. I can't even stand up. Sometimes I even have to crawl into the bathroom. I'm totally paralyzed.
I know. Well, that's what happened to me the other night. I was laying.
Hello? It sounds like we've lost Rosemary, folks, so I'm going to conclude the show here. and say thanks to Rosemary for sharing her story with us. I do hope, after hearing Rosemary's story and the others posted on this show's website, that people would begin to realize that society is facing a major threat to privacy and freedom, and that those folks who have listened right here will hear. So let me say in closing here that sometimes listeners will write in and ask, what can we do? At this point in time, in my view, the most helpful thing that anyone can do is increase the numbers of people who are at least aware of organized citizen gang stalking. Members of the public who share this information with others can simply say they heard about it on Road to Freedom without endorsing it. That way, the person sharing the information isn't risking their personal reputation. They are just reporting what they heard. If the person you mention this crime syndrome to rejects it, fine, just drop the subject. But those of us who are targets give you our sincerest thanks for trying. Ultimately, if we can increase our numbers enough, perhaps organized stalking can be stopped before it affects you or your loved ones. And don't forget that civilian harassment groups are a standard feature of all tyrannical governments, even during the time a dictator is working up towards the takeover. Hitler had harassment squads in civilian clothes. Stalin did, and so has every other dictator. Surveillance and control at the neighborhood level are essential to establishing and maintaining a dictatorship. Please keep this in mind and don't take the issue of organized citizen gang stalking lightly. For more information on organized stalking and electronic harassment, please see the links to this please see the links to other sites on this show's website, which again is shoestringradio.net. Well, folks, that's it for today. I invite you to join us next time as we travel the road to freedom. And never forget, freedom isn't free. Thank you.